Five, four, three, two. You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening, I'm Al Vona. Nice to have you with us this Sunday evening. Recent decision by the United States Supreme Court regarding the census and the citizenship question. From what I can see and from what many analysts can see, it looked like it was a no-brainer. Really no legal precedent, yet the court decided to send it back to the Department of Commerce. Many people are scratching their heads asking why. And for the next half hour, we'll be talking about that and trying to sort things out. My guest this week is Erin Hawley, and she is a legal fellow at the Independent Women's Forum in Washington, D.C., and has been following this very, very closely. Erin, nice to have you with us.
Thanks so much for having me. Great to be here.
From what I've read, and I'm not an attorney, I spent some time in law school, but thank God they recognized that they didn't need another one. It seems like everything, there were really no legal precedent to send this thing back. It was legitimate to ask that question. I think the vast majority of Americans would agree. And especially with this particular court, you would have thought that they would have worked long with the Chief Justice on this. But for some reason, they felt otherwise. What's going on?
Yeah, so I think that's exactly correct. And if you look at the opinion, it actually has two parts. And the two parts are very, very different, not unlike other sort of high-profile cases we have seen in the past. So the Chief Justice writes both parts, but in the first part of the opinion, he actually says that it is perfectly constitutional for Congress, for the Department of Commerce, to ask on the census questions about citizenship. And says, in fact, the opinion says since 1790, the court has often used the census for information gathering purposes, for all sorts of purposes, and in fact, between 1820 and 2000, every census but one had a question on it regarding either citizenship or place of birth. So the first part of the opinion is very, very clear, and it says the enumeration clause does not prevent the Department of Commerce from asking such a question. In fact, if you look at the long history, the storied history of the census, it's quite clear that it can be used in this way, and it's perfectly constitutional for the Commerce Department to ask this question.
I mean, almost anything I do, I think you'd agree, your driver's license, anything that you need in this country many, many times, the question of citizenship comes up. And to me, it's very legitimate. I don't think we're, but we live in a day and age, Erin, I guess is what I'm trying to say. We live at a time where everybody is very sensitive to why are you asking that question? Do you have a problem with me? Is it my race? Is my color? Is my gender? Is that what's fueling all this?
I think that's probably right. I think there's this debate or this identity politics that's sort of pervading what should be a very, very basic question. I think it's, as previous censuses have shown, it's legitimate to ask who is residing in various places. We need that sort of information just in order to know how many congressional delegates to allocate each state. So the census does important work in identifying sort of the number of congressional members that each state has. It's also a tool that the federal government can use to identify information about its citizenry. So you can ask questions about health, you can ask questions about age or gender, and just these sorts of information pieces that might help the Department of Commerce better advise itself and other departments help better to govern. If you think about healthcare, it would be very important to know sort of what the citizenry looks like, what the American public, I should say, looks like, what everyone in the various states looks like when you're talking about healthcare and how to form the best policies for that field. So absolutely.
Again, I feel, and I want to get your sense on this, that the Chief Justice kind of sets the tone. It's always been my experience that that's the case. That's the role of the Chief Justice. That doesn't mean that if he or she feels one way or the other, that the entire court should go that way. But you get the sense that Roberts was on board with all of this. And then decides, along with his colleagues, that there's really no legal precedent to hold this thing up, but we're going to send it back to the Department of Commerce. Were you a little surprised? I mean, is this showing another side to John Roberts?
I was a little surprised, and I think you're exactly right. He views the role of the court as being very important, and rightly so. And if we look at the separated powers that the founders set up, of course, Congress is the branch that's charged with making the law. The executive is the branch that charges with executing or enforcing the law. And the court is supposed to be more of a neutral arbiter that simply interprets the law. Of course, that interpretation can involve some analysis and those sorts of things, but the chief is very firm that he sees the court as simply an arbiter, not a policymaking arm in any sense. And that's all good and right. But I think when you look at this decision, you see two parts, as I was saying. And the first part is where the chief justice, on behalf of the himself and the four more conservative justices, as they're typically called, it says, the enumeration clause clearly permits this. It is plainly constitutional for the Commerce Department to ask about citizenship. But then you see a complete flip in the second part of the decision. And in the second part of the decision, this time he's joined by the four more liberal justices. And what they say is, we're analyzing this census question under the Administrative Procedure Act. And even though we can't identify a single specific problem, we're going to send it back because we don't think he was telling the truth. Mm. And that really is sort of a holding there that's without precedent. And it's a real flip from the first part of the decision. So I think you might see in the Chief Justice here a little bit of balancing. He sets out an important constitutional principle in the first part, not unlike the first Affordable Care Act decision.
Right.
So in the Affordable Care Act decision, he said under the Commerce Clause, Congress cannot force people to buy anything, can't force them to buy health insurance. But then in the second part of the decision, he uses sort of the saving principles of statutory interpretation and says, well, we can call it a tax. And under tax, the Affordable Care Act and the individual mandate can be upheld. So this opinion here in the Commerce case has a similar flavor because the court sets out a constitutional principle and says this census question is constitutional, but we find for some reason that the secretary didn't quite do his job correctly, so we're going to send it back. So a little bit of splitting the baby here, but I don't think it quite works under the law.
So many people, whether they're legally trained or not, know, and I think you'd agree, but I want to get your sense on this, that this comes down to how each of the members of the court, in other words, interpretation, how you see things, how he or she may see things. You can debate this back and forth, but at the end of the day, if you put the question back on the census, 300 million Americans, some people would say, who really is out there? Who is going to qualify? Who's going to quantify that? I mean, I could put that I am, but I'm not, or I could put that I'm not, but I am. So my question is it even relevant?
Well, that's a good question, but that's kind of a policy question, and it's not a question actually that the court should be deciding. In fact, when you look at the Administrative Procedure Act, so every agency action is analyzed under this statute passed by Congress that's called the Administrative Procedure Act. So when an agency passes a rule, when an agency, the Environmental Protection Agency, for example, passes something regulating anything from air quality to those sorts of things, any action undertaken by an agency is analyzed under this Administrative Procedure Act. And what that act does is it says the courts are not policymaking. They're not to inquire into the substance or the wisdom of a policy, but the Administrative Procedure Act is there to sort of make sure the agency followed proper procedures, to sort of hold them to a procedural posture. But it's a fairly deferential review. And in Section 706, it says that a court can only overturn an agency action. So so can only overturn the Department of Commerce's decision here to have a census question if the action is either arbitrary, capricious, an abuse of discretion, or contrary to law. Well, we know it's not contrary to law because the court said it was plainly constitutional. And the opinion here, the opinion signed by the four liberal justices, in fact, goes on and says that we don't find any part of the secretary's decision-making that was arbitrary, capricious, or an abuse of discretion. They walk through it, and they say that actually there was a concern that maybe, as I think you were suggesting, maybe certain households would underreport and not put accurate information because they didn't want to put that they weren't citizens, those sorts of things. And the court actually looks at that and says that the secretary considered those concerns and adequately addressed them. So the court basically says it was a reasoned decision-making process by the Department of Commerce. In fact, this is really astounding to me. The court, after looking at the entire decision-making process, and by the way, the record in this case is simply voluminous because the district court here conducted reams and reams of discovery into the decision-making process of the Department of Commerce. They deposed a number of people. They actually wanted to depose the Secretary of Commerce himself, which is a very unusual step that the Supreme Court blocked. But the court had this massive record. They went through all of this evidence, analyzing it under the Administrative Procedure Act, and the court concluded, again, this is the chief and the four liberal justices, that there is, quote, no particular step, end quote, in the record that, quote, stands out as inappropriate or defective. So the court looks at all of this evidence under the Administrative Act, says there's no particular step that stands out as inappropriate, and yet somehow sends it back. Pretty astounding.
Yeah, I'm not a legal, have a legal background or a lot of experience with this, but it would seem to me that, everything was given a green light and at the last minute pulled back. And I'm sure, and I want to get your sense on this as well, that any department, I mean, anything that comes by, I mean, the Department of Commerce did not just through happenstance throw this in front of the court. I'm sure that they and their legal team looked this over very, very carefully, made sure that they had all the, all their I's dotted and their T's crossed, so that there was, hope that this would be clear sailing. When preparing something like this that they know is going to go through the scrutiny of the court, do they indeed make sure that they basically have everything, in a nutshell covered?
Absolutely. And this question, as you mentioned, of course, is sensitive with some people worried about what effects it might have. And so particularly when you're talking about this type of question, the agencies are very familiar with the Administrative Procedure Act and with its requirements for sort of reasoned, rational decision-making. One of the requirements is that the agency has to consider comments, public comments, and then sort of incorporate those into its decision-making, show that it took those comments and assessed them and evaluated them. So the Department of Commerce here did all of that. They followed the proper procedures. They followed the proper steps under the Administrative Procedure Act. And then they were also on, as they knew, very solid ground in terms of legally and the constitutional, thinking about the censuses throughout history, the types of questions they had asked. I think censuses had even asked questions such as, the amount of real estate you hold. So all sorts of questions about information, about marital status. So the agency here, the Department of Commerce, both followed the steps, was very careful to follow the steps of the Administrative Procedure Act, and was also, I think, thought that they were on very strong legal ground, asking a question for information purposes about citizenship.
And especially, as you just said, I mean, anybody that's ever filled out the U.S. Census, I mean, they do ask a lot of personal questions. And yes, I'm sure from time to time people scratch their head going, what right did they have to ask this? But it's been done for, for years and years and years. So this is nothing new. I want to take a quick pause. We'll be right back. You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at wicn.org. I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. Nice to have you with us if you're just joining us. My guest this week is Erin Hawley, and she is the legal fellow at the Independent Women's Forum in Washington, D.C. And we're talking about the recent decision by the United States Supreme Court regarding the citizenship question on the U.S. Census, which from any corner you look at, it looked like it was clear sailing, and yet at the last moment was sent back. And the reasons why and the motivations behind it. And Erin, I go back to, as you said, there is no legal precedent. It's no different than almost any other question. How much real estate do you own? Are you married? How many children? You know, what time do you get up in the morning? How many times do you brush your teeth? I know I'm over-exaggerating, but you kind of get the drift. But the fact of the matter is that this has been going on for such a long time, but yet... I think I said it at the beginning. There's almost certain reverberations, and I remember this very clearly. And I don't want to stir up a hornet's nest. And you may say, why is he going in this direction? The civil rights problems that we had in this country and continue to have in this country, but so much so in the '60s, all you had to do was say something the wrong way, and there were riots, and there was so much division between. Races in this country. This almost kind of feeds that fire again. Now, I may be stretching it. I may be reaching a little bit beyond. But again, there seems to be a renewed sensitivity about, why did you ask that question? That's not a legitimate question to ask me. You're looking for trouble. You're looking for something more than what's in black and white. Again, am I stirring the hornet's nest?
I'm not sure. I think that that's sort of the reason that the issue itself is getting so much press, why the case was so widely watched,
right,
among courts. Because if you think of the actual question, you know, it's sort of a bare-bones constitutional question and then an Administrative Procedure Act question, and probably most people have never even heard of the Administrative Procedure Act and probably don't care to. So I think you're right that this question touches on something that stirring up and is emotional. But the court's job, as we've talked about here, is to interpret the Constitution and to apply the law that Congress has written. And the enumeration clause of the Constitution, under that clause, Congress delegated to the Secretary of the Commerce the task of forming a census, quote, in such form and content as he may determine. So Congress, our people's elected representatives, gave to the Secretary of Commerce broad discretion in forming and sending out a census in order to gather information so that the federal government could better undertake its responsibilities to serve the American people. So really, I think you're right that this is one of the reasons, this sort of a sensitive question that can stir up emotions. But the court's job is really to take it as a legal matter, as a constitutional matter. And I think you see that in most of the opinion, because the court follows, you know, clear historical precedent and says that the Constitution clearly permits the Department of Commerce to ask questions about citizenship. As you said, they ask questions about all sorts of things, and citizenship can be included in that. And then in the second part of the opinion, the court says that under the Administrative Procedure Act, we don't see anything in particular wrong with the decision. But this is important. In the very last part of the decision, the court says, even though we don't find anything in particular wrong under either the Constitution or the Administrative Procedure Act, we basically just don't believe Secretary Roth on his rationale for asking this question, so we're going to send it back to the Department of Commerce. So really extraordinary. As Justice Clarence Thomas points out in his dissent, there's been no decision by the Supreme Court that has ever sent an agency decision back on grounds of pretext. And pretext is just a sort of a fancy term for a legal term for a lie.
Right.
So basically the court saying, we don't believe you. And Justice Thomas is saying, we have never in the history of the Supreme Court sent back an agency action saying we don't believe an agency.
Yeah, I mean, the evidence is right there. It's black and white. You know, I almost, again, I may be reaching, but I've heard this from people. I mean, as soon as this all came down, some of the people that I talked to about this issue, many are saying, well, you know what? It followed, as you said, the Constitution. I mean, that's the role of the U.S. Supreme Court. If there's a deviation there, then it's their responsibility to debate it, bring it to the forefront, vote it up or vote it down. But this seemed to follow right along with everything that was required. It didn't seem to deviate in any way, shape, or form. So let me ask you, this presidency, this sitting president, Donald Trump, has had, certainly this administration has certainly had its share of blowback from all sides. It's an administration that's probably been critiqued more than any in recent history, to my knowledge. So could this be politics, Aaron? I hate to say that. I mean, because you made it very clear that the role of the United States Supreme Court, those justices have a legal obligation. Forget about their personal views, their political views. They need to follow what the Constitution says. And if everything falls in line, then what reason could there be to disallow this or send it back? It sounds like everything was there. Everything you'd want legally was there. But so, again, is this a possible blowback to the Trump administration and saying, hey, you know, here's one on the chin to you?
Well, I think it's certainly possible to interpret it that way. And I would imagine that the Trump administration sort of feels that way. I think if you're thinking about the court from an institutional perspective, I think the Chief Justice was sort of possibly trying to both have his cake and eat it too. And again, I just have to remind your listeners of the first Affordable Care Act decision, because it's structured very, very similarly. Mm. And in that case, the court sets out this important constitutional principle that the government can't force you to, for example, buy broccoli. You know, we all know broccoli is good for us. We all know we should eat more of it. We all know that it's good for our health. And if we eat more broccoli, we probably will have fewer medical bills, along with other things that are good for us, if we do other things as well. But regardless, even if it's good for us, the government can't make us buy broccoli. And so the court said that, with the Chief Justice writing in the first part of the opinion. But in the second part of the opinion, the Chief Justice is joined by a completely different set of justices. And he says, but we're going to sort of save this statute because it's a signature sort of statute of the Obama administration. We're going to save it by construing it as a taxing under the taxing power, even though Congress has said we're not doing a tax. Congress doesn't ever like to implement taxes. Taxes are not popular.
Right.
So Congress has said that the Affordable Care Act isn't a tax, but the Chief Justice with the liberal justices says it is, in order to save it and keep the statute enacted, keep it functional, does not strike it down. And I think you see that very same setup here. So you've got the first four part of the opinion, joined by the four conservative justices, and the Chief sets up an important constitutional principle. The census can be used for information gathering purposes, and it can be used to ask census questions. But in the very last part of the decision, he sort of, you know, tries to maybe satisfy all sides, I'm not sure, but we're not satisfied with this one. We think he's not telling the truth. We're going to send it back to the Department of Commerce.
You know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I want to backtrack a little bit here, because I don't want people to think, well, Vona thinks that the U.S. Supreme Court is in the pocket. Some are in the pocket of the president and some oppose the president. Again, that may very well be the case in their own personal views. But as you said, they have a constitutional responsibility here. So a number of times I've heard you, in fact, from the outset, mentioned that the Chief Justice, in this case, John Roberts, sets the tone. It sounds like he might have flip-flopped here. In hindsight, is this the John Roberts that you're familiar with? I mean, did he misstep here?
So there's, I am not aware of any evidence that he may have flip-flopped in this case, although I think his opinion sets out sort of two different views. You've got a very straightforward legal analysis, a very good constitutional decision, and then you've got a sort of maybe a softer part of the decision that relies on this pretext argument that's not supported by prior Supreme Court case law. So I think you might see a Chief Justice who's concerned about, you know, the institutional role of the court, I think might be animating some of his decisions. But I think if you go back to Justice Thomas's dissent, when you look at the court's opinion, the majority's opinion, you've got the clear holding that it's constitutional. You've got the holding that there's no particular sort of problem. There's no identified problem under the Administrative Procedure Act. And yet the court comes up with this new ground to send it back to the Department of Commerce, saying that they don't believe the secretary for his rationale.
So where, as we start to wind down here, Erin, where does this thing go? It goes back to the Department of Commerce, back to the secretary. Do you really think that they're going? Are they going to back off and say, all right, we'll eliminate the question all over? I don't see that.
No, and so this is another sort of interesting wrinkle of the opinion. It's basically a roadmap to the Department of Commerce to say how that is completely legal to have a census question. It's completely possible to have a census question under the Administrative Procedure Act, under the Constitution. And really all you need to do, Department of Commerce, is to provide the same process through the Administrative Procedure Act and give basically another legally sufficient reason. And it's important to realize that under the Administrative Procedure Act, there's sort of background principles, and an agency only has to offer one reason for its decision. It can have other reasons in the back of its mind, to the sense that an agency has in mind, but it can have other reasons and rationales, but all it needs to do is offer one legally sufficient reason to justify its action here.
Yeah.
So back before the Department of Commerce, that's all they need to do is offer one explanation for a citizenship question. And then the process of printing and getting it out in time, that's a different matter. But the opinion here is a roadmap for how to get a census question, a citizen question on the census.
Yeah. I guess in the closing moments that this, this will... This red flag, I call it a red flag at this point, is going to make it a little bit more difficult navigating any time, whether it's a census or any other documentation where it goes out to the public at large, to the American taxpayers, asking for, what many people would say, well, that's a very personal question. But nonetheless, I always get the sense that, we got to be very careful now. Here we go. We can't do what we did in the past. We have to walk a fine line, and I always think that can get very heady. I think that can always get very tenuous as time goes on, but we'll have to see. But I'm so grateful for your analysis on this, because I know you follow this very, very closely. If people want to get more information about you personally, the work that you do there at the Independent Women's Forum, is there a website or an email?
Absolutely. So the Independent Women Forum has a very active blog, the IWF blog, and also the website that has lots of information about legal policy issues as well as policy issues more broadly.
And for those of for the listeners going to that website that Erin just gave you, it will also bring up a biography of Erin. Her background has worked very closely, on cases like this. So she's very well versed in this type of case law. And I'm sure she'll be covering this very carefully. Again, we've been talking about the recent decision by the United States Supreme Court to send back to the Department of Commerce the question of citizenship on the census that we, every so often Americans need to fill out, that's sent to us by the federal government. This one just seemed, it seemed to be clear sailing. Everything seemed to be in order. But it was sent back, so we'll have to see what happens at this point. Again, I want to thank my guest, Erin Hawley, legal fellow at the Independent Women's Forum. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments or questions or feedback to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona.